Do you have any questions from last time before we start? No? So just to want to start with an example today, just showing quickly what can be the advantages of a more abstract framework in a simple concrete case. So what we've seen is that we can write mechanics in terms of this. So this is a very brief recap. In terms of a two-form on our phase space, and that there are Darboux's theorem tells us that locally I can always write it in a canonical form. Now the fact is canonical coordinates are not always super transparent, let's say. So an example of these where it's actually better to use not a canonical, it's more transparent to work with a non-canonical symplectic structure, is the following. So let's consider a particle u dot I. So here the indices, since my metric is just a Dirac delta, I don't really care where I'm putting them. And it's a particle coupled to an external electromagnetic field. So A and V are fixed functions here. And now, as it's well known, the Dioli-Lagrange equations for these systems are let's write it like this. So there is the electric force, which is a gradient, and then there is the Lorentz force. I hope my signs right, epsilon, but it's not too important for what I want to say to get the signs right. So, and B, of course, is the curl of A. Okay, so this is the Lagrangian system, but what if we look at the Hamiltonian version of this? Well, we have first to define the canonical momentum, which is defined like this. And what we get is not just Q dot, but we also get A. So in this case, so this is our momentum. And now if I write the Hamiltonian is P minus A square, plus V of Q. I'm sure we have already seen this, but what I want to get is that here, of course, since I'm working in canonical coordinates, my symplectic structure is like this, and the Hamiltonian equations of motion are not so transparent because they tell me that Hamiltonian equations of motion, the first one is the definition of P as usual. I'm not sure with the signs. Well, this. And this is a function of Q. And the second one tells me how Q, this would be for Q dot. Sorry, I'm just getting them. Q dot is P I. And the other one is P dot. And this is something like the gradient of V minus the sum over J of P plus A J gradient over I A J. So this doesn't look really like anything. It's not clearly gauge invariant and so on. By the way, it's nice to ask why this is gauge invariant under gauge transformation of A. I leave that as an exercise, as a cute exercise. So this is not very transparent. But in the symplectic formalism, I've actually have the freedom of choosing my coordinates on phase space as I please. So I do a coordinate transformation new coordinates, which will not be canonical anymore. And I define V as being, well, essentially Q dot. But I think of it as a redefinition of my momentum. And I leave Q to be Q. And now I want to work with V and Q coordinates. And all of a sudden, my Hamiltonian is just the energy. It's manifest, like, I recognize its physical meaning. But and omega is not, omega, of course, now is not the canonical one anymore. So let's, is the same omega as before, but I write it as dvi dqi. But there is a new term coming from the differentiation of this a. So let me define it in the following way. So I write a as a form is di ai dqi. And so this is just plus dA. So we recognize that this is gauge invariant now, because it's nothing else than bi epsilon ijk dqj, which probably with a 1/2. So now this one is just the same as before, but written in non-canonical coordinates. And it's gauge invariant. And if I look at the Hamiltonian equation of this new Hamiltonian with respect to this symplectic structure, they are quite transparent. And what I mean by that is that I'm computing x of h in these coordinates. So this is defined by just by this. And it takes a couple of lines to see it, but the solution will be v I d over dqi. So this is my q dot. And v dot will just be given by this equation.
Sorry,
yes?
If you're saying that now the generator is h, what was it before?
Oh, it's the same thing. I'm just writing it in a different coordinate. So I'm doing this coordinate transformation. So h as a function on p is the same quantity, except that written in these coordinates, which are non-canonical because they're not canonical variable on the phase space, the physics is more transparent. I haven't changed nothing about the description, just a coordinate, a better coordinate choice, you know. Does it answer the question?
Yeah, so the Hamiltonian is still like the essence. Okay.
Yep. So this is epsilon ijk dj dot k. And it's a good exercise to try to find these equations, because it kind of clarifies what is the interplay between the various objects. So I can move this A from the definition of my momenta and the Hamiltonian to a change in my symplectic stuff. This is another way of thinking about this. And now, yeah, this is just a simple case where having this freedom to use non-canonical coordinates makes things actually more transparent.
Seeing the gauge invariant simpler, right? Mm-hmm. It's simpler to see everything is gauge invariant.
Well, in that case, it's manifest at that point, right?
What was the problem with the first coordinate? It was
it's the so p is not gauge invariant.
Yeah, but it has also another transformation. So it has a transformation under gauge, right?
Yeah. I'm not. Of course, everything. Yeah. All the important physics is there, and it's correct.
From this coordinate to another coordinate.
I'm saying that what is not manifest, being manifest doesn't mean that it's not there. It just means that it's a bit muddled and one has to work to see it. But the Lagrangian I started with, so the Euler-Lagrange equations are gauge invariant. The Lagrangian is gauge invariant because if I do a gauge transformations, I'm adding a boundary term to the Lagrangian. So it's clear that everything must work at the end. But there, if I look at those equations of motion, it looks like I'm not so sure. Whereas in the other case, everything is like there's no doubt. So it's a matter of taste, but sometimes making things transparent is clarifying.
Another thing that I always had problem with is this P is not physical momentum anymore, right? Because under gauge transformation, it changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as strange because we call it momentum.
Yeah, so it's called canonical momentum because it's the choice of coordinates that make my symplectic structure darbu. Like it gives this form, but that's its only interesting property in a way. All the other properties are it's much better to work with the velocity. But then the Poisson bracket, if you want, between the velocity and q is not one. And in fact, I wrote it like this, but it's interesting to invert it and write the Poisson bracket as well. And that's another interesting exercise, but it's just to, so if you want to write the Poisson bracket between V and Q, that's a good exercise.
So we're saying the canonical form is more interesting, like just from a really abstract point of view, but once we're actually looking at the specific case,
it might not be the best choice. But when if you work with Poisson brackets, as you without giving this geometric interpretation behind them. It's also possible to give a geometric interpretation of Poisson brackets, but I think forms are easier to work with. So here, I just have all the freedom I want to choose my coordinates. And now I can leverage it to make better choices. Whereas if you want the bracket between Q and P to be one, you're kind of stuck in a situation where, yeah, your P might not be physically, as you were saying, very transparent.
Can we also move the
Yeah, of course. I can leave it in the middle. Yep, any other questions about this? So in fact, at the end of the day, what we gain is the freedom to choose our coordinates because we're working in a manifestly coordinate invariant way, which is completely geometric. This is the advantage of using forms. And so we are leveraging that advantage. We are free to choose the coordinates on phase space as we please. And we are sure that if we keep track, not just in the Hamiltonian, that's not enough. We need to change our symplectic structure as well. But once we do both, So going ahead with the program today, I want to talk about symmetries. So I said that Hamiltonian vector fields have the interpretation of symmetries, but it was a bit vague. Today I want to actually take a case where I have a Lie algebra or a Lie group acting on my phase space. So I have some transformations, and I want to study what happens in that case. Before going there, there is a proposition I want to discuss, which is the following. We have, as usual, P omega is symplectic, and I denote XF is the Hamiltonian vector field of F, which is a function on my phase space. And the statement let me write it and then I comment it. So what is the geometric interpretation of the Poisson bracket now? This is an alternative way of thinking about it. So I have my Hamiltonian vector fields, which are associated to two functions. And here I'm taking the Lie derivative as vectors on a manifold. This is the Lie bracket between two vector fields, which is equal to the lead derivative of one with respect to the other. And what this is telling me is that this operation, this the Poisson bracket is mirrored by the Lie bracket between the vector fields. So the two algebras are actually the same. They are homomorphic to each other. So now how to prove this? So what we do is to take the definition of what a Hamiltonian vector field is. This is the only piece of information we have. So let's write it again. And then we take, so this is about Lie derivatives. So we take the Lie derivative of this equation. What we do is to take the Lie derivative along, well, maybe I write it for G. Sorry about that, but it's a bit easier. So now I use my Hartan's calculus rules. So taking the Lie derivative of a contraction is like taking the contraction of the Lie derived vector field plus the contraction with the Lie derived form. So basically distributes over. So let's see what happens. Xf of xg, this one, omega plus I xg Lxf omega equal to minus the Lie derivative commutes with the differential if you want by if you write it with the Cartan's formula, it comes out immediately. So this is D of Lxf of g. Now we we work this out piece by piece. So this is just by definition the Lie bracket between the two vector fields plus this is zero because I use Cartan's formula. So omega is closed, so when D acts on it, it gives zero, and the other piece will be D of I x f omega, but this is minus the f, so this is also zero, and this drops because d square is zero. And this, how do I want to write it? So this is the derivative of the function g along xf, but this is exactly how I had defined in my Poisson bracket in the first place. You remember, xf is the f with the slot open, the bracket of f with the slot.
How did we get the first term in the top?
Sorry?
The first term on the top, yeah, that term.
This term is the Lie derivative acting on, so the Lie derivative distributes on all the pieces. Okay. So here, there is this vector field, and so it's deriving that vector field and then deriving the form. So this is done. Why? Because I have, if I look at my first term and last term, this is just telling me that this is the Hamiltonian vector field of this expression, of this function. So this is the end. So what we obtained is a relationship between here, and then I want to keep it. We have a relationship between this algebra, which is a Poisson algebra, and this algebra over here of vector fields. So this is bigger, but this, by mapping a function into its Hamiltonian vector field. I take a function, map it onto its Hamiltonian vector field, and that theorem tells me that this bracket is mapped onto that bracket.
So could you repeat the, I don't know what the letter is.
X? Oh, this is a frac X. It means they are just the vector fields on P. Is the space of vector fields of P. Is the section of the tangent bundle of P. But just vector fields. So these are vector fields. Now what I'm interested in is if I have another algebra, an algebra of symmetry. So I have a Lie algebra with its own bracket. Let's say rotation symmetry. I have SO3 with the bracket of SO3. And now I want to see how I can fit it into this scheme. So how I can represent it as functions somehow and as vector fields. So this is what we're going to do today. So what's the physical meaning of doing those, of answering that question? Well, it's saying I have a symmetry. What here we will find is generators. For example, angular momentum is a function on phase space associated to rotations. And these will be the infinitesimal rotations expressed as transformations on phase space. So this is, we're going to abstract this to the most general situation. Okay, so little definition. So we have G, which is a real, maybe I write it well. It's a real Lie algebra. And today is the last time I will do all these definition theorems format. So this is our Lie algebra, and now we want to define an action of G on P. So what is this action? This action is a map that takes me an infinitesimal transformation. You can think of this as an infinitesimal rotation, and tells me how the field in P, the field, the configurations in P transform. So this is a vector field on P. To say that everything is consistent, I have to also say that if I take the commutator of two rotations, I also get the commutator of the transformations. So what I'm asking is that this is a homomorphism of Lie algebras. I will write now what homomorphism of Lie algebras. I will now write what this means. This means that rho is linear. So if I take the sum of two infinitesimal rotation, I just find the sum of the associated rotations in phase space or in configuration space. And most importantly, the row of the commutator is the commutator of the rows, where the commutator of the rows means that I'm applying two transformations to my systems. And so they are is a bracket among vector fields. So the picture I have in mind is that to each transformation, I associate a vector field like that. So it tells me if I apply a rotation where I'm gonna land on phase space. Now, these, I will not insist on this too much, but let me just say that these guarantees that if I take the space of all possible vector fields at every point, so this defines here some plane, we'll define here some other plane, well, hyperplane in phase space. And this guarantees that these families of hyperplanes over my phase space is integrable to a manifold. So if you want, it means that these are just the tangent direction of a submanifold. What is the submanifold? Is if I act with the group instead of the Lie algebra, I have orbits. And now these are the tangent spaces to those orbits. So this is, but I will not insist on this point. I don't really, Frobenius theorem. So if you look at these in terms of Frobenius theorem, it tells you what I've just said in words. But that's a little bit of an aside. Okay, now, so this is just about, knows nothing about my symplectic structure. I also want to say that all these things I've added to my phase space are compatible with my symplectic structure. What does it mean? It will mean that these transformations, I want them to be Hamiltonian. So G, I call G a Hamiltonian symmetry, or maybe a kinematical symmetry. Because it's about phase space. So that's why kinematical seems a good name. It doesn't need to preserve the Hamiltonian, but just the symplectic structure in this sense is a kinematical and not dynamical symmetry. If and only if there exist functions that for each element of my Lie algebra, for each infinitesimal transformation, gives me a generator. Such that I of rho of psi equal to minus j star of psi. So this is just telling me that for each transformations, the transformations are Hamiltonian. That's what it's telling me. Nothing else. This j star is called the co-momentum map. So this is how mathematicians call it. I will now give you two other names for it, and one is the one used by physicists. So this map J star has to be linear in psi because the left-hand side is. So if this satisfies this equation because of this formula over here, clearly J star is linear. So what does this mean? It means that I can also think of it as a map J from my phase space in the dual of the Lie algebra. This is just a way to enforce linearity, is nothing else. So instead of thinking of it as a linear map from G onto functions on phase space, I just think of it as a function valued in the dual.
Hello?
Yes.
I want to talk about the definition of that.
Yes.
If I have GZ, you will give me a function on phase space that has that property, right?
This property, yes.
But this function is very simple. Can you give an example of this?
Yes, I will give an example in a second. I just wanted to say that there are couple of ways of thinking about this, and I will not make much of a difference. For me, it's just J together with psi are just a single object. This is what is called the momentum map. And physicists call either one the charge. And so I will not make a difference between the two notations. In any case, I will always put them together with the psi. So for me, J psi is always the charge or the generators of the symmetry, depending on context. It's not such a precise. So let's look at an example. I have them here. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if this is like kind of like a weird way to phrase Noether's theorem. Like you can only place the symmetry inside the phase space if you have this charge.
So is that what this will be in field theory that we will start seeing from tomorrow, I hope. I think. This will be the Noether current. So in that case, it's a current because it's in the continuum and so on, but it's just. So, OK, examples. Just let's stick to the case. So for now, I don't need an Hamiltonian. So I just care about the symplectic space. So I just take the particle. In fact, let's do it. It doesn't really matter. Let's do it. Okay. So now we have translation symmetry. The first one that I look is translations. The translations do what? Take my qi into qi plus. First of all, let me define the algebra. Let's say that qi is in Rn. So g is just Rn. And the bracket is trivial. It's just 0 because it's a commutative. Translation is a commutative algebra. Now, what is rho of xi? Rho of xi tells me how the coordinates transform. So I want q to go in what? In q plus psi. So this is telling me that q goes in q plus psi. And p, let's forget about the electromagnetic case, it's just the momentum, it's just the velocity, so it doesn't change under translations. So this is just 0. And this says that P goes to P. What is J of Xi? I take this vector field, I contract it with this, and I find. What do I find? DDQ
KCDP.
Gives you this and gives me just DP. So it's Xi I DPI. But Xi is just a number. It's not part of phase space. So J of Xi is. So the momentum generates translations. This is the usual result. Yeah?
Just one question to follow up was what Charlie was asking. Like I see the picture that we're trying to lift things just to this infinitesimal level, but I'm not sure where J like lives.
Good question. So J, I want to think of it as a, so J of Xi is a function on phase space. So let me rewrite it here. J of Xi is a function on phase space in R. And the value of this is Xi dot P. So, and then it's a function that I can differentiate. And if I differentiate, I get psi dp, because psi is just a constant for what I'm concerned here.
So we're saying like the conserved current would be like the specific instance if we feed to the map J a.
So what I'm doing is the following. I know my symmetry. I find a way. Usually, this is given by something. You study your Lagrangian, and you know that there is a symmetry acting on the variables that acts in a certain way. So we know translations very well, so we can guess what it is. So this is what rho, how rho is defined. And then these I can compute. I'm not guessing. I'm computing it by looking at the equations that defines it. It could be that if I had, for example, my symplectic structure over there with an extra piece that contains the magnetic field, and that magnetic field, it might spoil this relation. And then translations in that context do not have a momentum map. They do not have to a priori. But if you're doing things properly and you know what's going on, you know that that translations are, in this case, a symmetry. And so they have a generator, and the generator is momentum. So again, this is telling me that momentum generates translation. So this is another way to write that equation, which is maybe more familiar, but is precisely the same thing I've written here, except is reversed. I put the instead of the bracket on this side, I put omega on that side. Yeah.
What about the minus sign?
Yeah. This is correct. There are two minus signs that appear, one here and one here. Sorry, you're right. So because here I had to go through the P with my vector, so it picks a minus sign before hitting the Q. And this is this minus sign. And now by definition, there is a minus sign in the definition of J. Yeah, so it's always P, it's not minus P. I just had two mistakes that compensated each other. What about rotations? Shall we do rotations? Which is a bit more complicated. It's more complicated because the algebra is not abelian. So how do I see? I should have checked that. I want to take the Lie bracket between two of these rows and see that is zero. But this is obviously so because the xi are constants. So when I derive their components, they just give zero. Let's do rotations. So in this case, G is SO3. And so the brackets, how do I want to write it? Let's write it like this. Psi
no.
Psi I tau I. These are it's my basis. And the bracket between two of these is psi epsilon ijk psi I eta j tau k. So it's the cross product between the two. I can also write this as psi eta. It's a bit symbolic, but if you, where tau are essentially Pauli matrices with maybe their own I over two factors if needed. Okay. Now, how do they act on phase space? So I have to say how my Qs transform. So they transform as vectors. So this is just the epsilon. Sorry, it spares me some indices, but it's just this epsilon ijk, xij, qk. And how do the momenta transform? Well, the same, because they're also vectors. So now both change. And I also can compute what happens to this bracket. So this is a bit of work, but the idea, I'm not sure I want to do this at the Blackbird. We can do it this afternoon if you want me to. So the point is that this Q goes and derive this expression for the eta one, because it's the only place where Q is. So essentially, it will give me psi cross eta if I rearrange the indices appropriately. And the same for P. So they do not mix, because the P part cannot derive this guy. So I will not find mixed terms in that sense, because it just gives zero. So in the end, I will find rho of psi, let's write it like this, maybe psi cross eta, which is just what I was expecting. So I'm just saying that it's plausible that it works, but it does. Up to science, of course, because I've not been careful. Does it make sense? So how do I compute the lead derivative? Maybe let me write this formula once. So if I have a vector written like this, the lead derivative of two vectors is psi I derives, so the j's component of this is the derivative of y along x minus the opposite. So this is a very important formula. I could put, so, or dxi yj minus dyj, as you. So I'm using these to compute. Now when I do, when I compute this one, now it's a bit more complicated because I have two terms coming out. There is, let's start from P, which is on the left, so it doesn't change sign. I get PI DQI. And then I get another one with the opposite sign with DPI, because I'm going across DP to hit DQ, and that's the sign that I have. But now, I just use the identity of, so this is a dot product if we use vectors. So they are cyclically, I can turn things around cyclically and find that this is, I want to put psi outside. So this is P cross DQ dot psi. And here I find Q cross DP, but I can also write it as dp cross dq, cross q, sorry, dot xi. And of course, this is just d of p cross q dot xi. And this is the angular momentum, well, minus the angular momentum in the xi direction. So I've rediscovered angular momentum with this. It looks complicated maybe, but it's just, you turn a crank. Once you know the transformation properties, this is barely worth checking most of the time, because if things act, they just act the right way. This just means that things are consistent. And then, you look at this. Doing this is a bit easier than guessing what to put in a Poisson bracket. Usually you have to, if you want to find the angular momentum, you have to say, oh, I guess this expression, I compute the Poisson bracket and it works. Here is algorithmical in a way, because you just plug your transformation in omega and you compute and see if you can write it as d of something. So it's in fact a bit easier even than the Poisson. Okay.
Maybe Ando, can you explain?
Yep.
From your Lie algebra element, how did we get that vector field?
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just saying that Q, I know that Q in the, I interpret Q as the position vector. So how does it transform under an infinitesimal rotation? So delta Q is psi cross Q. Does this formula make sense? OK, so now this is just this. So the general, yeah, I should have written it. You're right. So in general, the way I write rho of psi, the way I think of it is I have my transformation on the relevant coordinate is this formula over here in general. Because when rho derives a function on my phase space, let's see what happens. F of Qs and Ps, for example, well, yeah, is df over dq times d xi of q, and the same for p. So is exactly what I wanted to do. This vector field tells me how f changes under infinitesimal rotation if rho has this component. Yeah, sorry, this is, I think, clarifying.
For finding your rho, we need more information. We need to know how the algebra acts on our field.
Of course. It is usually somehow, it is the physics that tells you that. So if you have rotations and you know that what a rotation is in the first place, there's no recipe. Although I think Noether theorems also tells you that if you have certain kind of invariances, then they should get organized as a Lie algebra. But that's kind of an abstract mathematical thing. I don't know if it tells you.
Representations do your fields transform, right?
Yeah.
If a field space and symmetries, you should give which representation.
Yes, so this is telling you that the vector fields on field space are a representation of your Lie algebra. That's another way to say the same thing. And so, sure, if you know in which representation your field transforms, you automatically know that this works and how it works, exactly. But what I mean is that most of the cases, practical cases, are like rotations and translations. You know what your fields are, and you know how they should transform. It's part of your physical input in the theory. And if I will talk about gauge transformations, you know how gauge transformations act on your field. And it's the same thing. There is just the usual input that you would put. I'm just rephrasing it in these more geometrical terms, but I cannot tell you which symmetries your theory has. Absolutely.
I have another question. Where we ask something about Hamiltonian, like where Hamiltonian comes into the game.
So if I have an Hamiltonian, I can ask whether one of these symmetries is a dynamical symmetry, so it's preserved by the time evolution. What does it mean to be preserved by the time evolution? It means, maybe I can write it under here. Yeah, that's a good question. So, so we could give a definition of a dynamical symmetry. So it's one that commutes with the Hamiltonian. It means that if I do a rotation now and I do it later, is the two things should commute. So it means that given So dynamical symmetry, I need let P omega be symplectic. And now I have also to tell you what the dynamic is. So for example, I say H is a Hamiltonian, which defines my dynamics, is the associated Hamiltonian vector field. So this, as we saw, this is the geometric way of reading the dynamics. Is the flow of these vector fields is your dynamic. So now, if I have a symmetry, so let's G be a kinematical symmetry, then and so what does it mean? It means that I have, this tells me that J xi exists, that I have a momentum. So then G is a dynamic, is dynamical symmetry. If and only if, what happens? X, the row, sorry, I have this and that, which are the analog of H and XH. It's just a slightly different notation. This is the same by definition of this. If the two vector fields commute, XH. So this is a mutual relationship. It can be read as saying that rho doesn't change under the dynamics, or that the dynamics doesn't change under rho. But also, this is the same as saying that the bracket between my symmetry generator and the Hamiltonian is zero. In fact, it doesn't say that it's zero. It just says that it's constant, this equation. So you can take as a stronger definition would be that these two are that this bracket is zero greater than the bracket between the vector. I wanted to get there in a second. So maybe a stronger definition, which is a little better, is that these two commute, which is more the usual thing. But up to a constant, they are the same condition. And this also means that J xi is a conserved quantity, right? Because this is also, in fact, let me change the definition in the other way. It's more useful. I didn't think about it. So I want this. This implies, well, this is equal to L of XH. So the dynamics preserve J xi. So this can be wrote as dot d over dt. Or is this happens if rho preserves the Hamiltonian. In particular, the Hamiltonian is a conserved quantity. This is saying. And this also implies that the vector fields commute. So yeah, this is a better definition. In the last 5 minutes, I want to give the last statement. Is that clarifying?
So do we need mm-hmm. kinematical that representation to exist in order for us to be able to talk about it being done?
Well, I if it's not a symmetry, I wouldn't even call a symmetry something that doesn't have a generator. I wouldn't bother. It's not that. Yeah.
Because you can't
not that. I don't know what's the associated conserved quantities. Even independent, like the conservation depends on the choice of Hamiltonian, but you see that if I don't have the J, I cannot even put anything in here. So maybe, yeah, maybe there are ways of generalizing things, but I don't see the interest at this level. Try. Like a symmetry is just to distinguish what is a potential symmetry. I call it kinematical. And then if it's also compatible with the dynamics, then it gets promoted to an actual symmetry of the system.
And just, I don't
know.
Mm-hmm. No. Why do we start off with the co-momentum map in the definition if we're really using momentum map?
Oh, it's just because I wanted the function from G. It was me being pedantic of thinking of that as a function from G to the, to a map from G to the functions over phase space. That's what is called a co-momentum map. And if I dualize it, then I get a momentum. So I would like to finish that diagram and before going. And oh, no, maybe not. Tomorrow. So maybe I have time then for another. But don't you have a class later? I mean, it's fine with me. I don't know.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Okay.